Hello, this is Sean Seymour, London Walks, coming to the third instalment of my Westminster walk. And we've just passed the house that was owned by Lord McAlpine, where Margaret Thatcher sought refuge. And you can see this flint wall in front here. And it's part of Westminster School. Now, Westminster School is one of our great public schools. It's highly confusing talking to people from abroad. And you say, well, it's not really public. It is open to the public for those who can afford the fees. It's what you would term a private school, really. But anyway, it goes back to the 16th century, first founded in the time of King Henry VIII. And some quite, you know, it was good for name-dropping, Westminster School. You know, we'll come through the archway here and come into an area known as Dean's Yard. And you can see Westminster School on the right-hand side. All you can see is just a long wall here with various doors and windows, but it extends in three or four blocks in a southerly direction. And it's over 700 pupils. It's partly day school, partly boarding school. And the fees are somewhat high, as they are for most public schools like Eton and Winchester. It's about £35,000 a year. Partly day school, partly boarding, from the age of 11 through to the age of 18. And it has some interesting traditions. One of my favourites is a strange ritual called the Grease, which is a pancake fight. The school cook, this is on perhaps on Shrove Tuesday, just before Easter, and the school cook makes a huge pancake, which he then throws at a pile of boys who are allowed to fight viciously for 1 minute, and they blow a whistle at the end, and the boy with the largest piece of pancake in his possession receives a gold coin, a guinea, which he has to hand back because they have to use it next year. And just in case any boys try to hide pancake in their mouths as they're fighting, the school cook puts horsehair in the pancake. This is a horsehair pancake fight. Guess where Monty Python got most of his ideas from? During one of these fights, apparently, Andrew Lloyd Webber, the composer, was almost killed by a pile of boys jumping on him. Yes, some other old boys include Sir Christopher Wren, genius architect, Gibbon, the great historian, and we also have Nick Clegg, formerly Deputy Prime Minister, and Helena Bonham Carter, the Harry Potter actress, and Dido the pop singer. Girls are admitted at the upper level and as the sixth form. So from the age of 16, they're there. Now, we've got the Westminster School on the right-hand side, and just behind us here is a red brick building, which was opened in 1939. It's got various shields on it, coloured shields. It's called Church House. This is where the bishops of the Church of England debate certain matters. And the House of Commons was actually, the actual house, the chamber itself, was bombed very badly in 1941, and churches said, we carry on in Church House, we don't lose the day's debate. So they carried on here. And it's also where the United Nations Security Council first met in 1945. So that's Church House, and you see the green sward in front here. This is Dean's Yard Green, which is used by boys and girls at Westminster School from time to time. And you can hear the strains of music coming sometimes from the other part of the of the square here, and that's the students who study music at Westminster. And you can sometimes see the choristers coming out of the choir school, looking like Harry Potter extras, all shuffling in to do their business in Westminster Abbey itself. As we come round the Abbey, you'll see it's made of Portland stone, Reigate stone, Clipsham stone. It's a variety of different limestones, and it was restored quite recently. It looks magnificent. If you go to France, you'll find churches of a similar kind of style of architecture, places like Amiens or Chartres, very similar, because Henry III, who had it rebuilt in the 13th century, would emulate the French style. Now, we're going to start off at Westminster Abbey at the west door, and that's the main entrance there. And as we get round, you can see just at the top is the coat of arms of George II, lion and unicorn there, because these towers were finally completed during his reign in the 1740s. And it's through this door, if you look through the door, actually you can see the chandeliers. They're magnificent. They were the gift of the Guinness family, the brewing family, to commemorate the anniversary of the Abbey in the 1980s, made of Waterford crystal. Really gorgeous. And it's through this door the Queen entered when she was crowned. This is the last coronation we had performed here. She walked on a red carpet, which did a detour around the only grave nobody can walk over, the Tomb of the Unknown Warrior, walked up to the choir stalls, and the scholars of Westminster School chanted Vivat Regina. She was then presented to the people. Now, normally for a service, they get about 2,000 people here. For her coronation, over 8,000. Great big seats, built like a football stadium, with ambassadors and marshals and generals and barons and heaven knows who, shuffling up the stairs with flasks of whiskey secreted in their pockets and sandwiches, because the whole thing took, you know, a good few hours to perform. So that was the last coronation. Now, if you want to attend an evensong here, you can do, and sometimes you'll hear the choir sing and get quite a good sermon too. That's the Abbey. Directly across, you've got Methodist Central Hall, which dates from 1910, used for religious services, for concerts and political conferences from time to time, and also the Elizabeth II Conference Centre over there, used for trade events and for public inquiries from time to time. OK, let's come away from this particular rather busy thoroughfare here and cross over, and we're heading towards a rather delightful green space. One of my favourites in London is St James's Park. So it takes a bit of time to get there, so bear with us as we cross over various streets looking out for traffic. It's fairly quiet this afternoon, thank heavens. Good. So coming into the park here, great variety of plant life, weeping willows. You've got London plane trees all around us here, and even a weeping beech just over by the bridge. And a great variety of bird life too. Now, can you see the island in the centre? It's got four pelicans sitting on it. These are Russian breed pelicans. And they were the gift of the Tsars of Russia in the 17th century. These aren't the original ones. They do replace them from time to time. But the pelican's a pinion, that is, part of the wing is cut off, so they can't fly anywhere interesting. They get a very good diet of fish here, and they also try to steal things from tourists, like hot dogs and ice cream. When the band plays for Change of the Guard, they very often shuffle up to Buckingham Palace. They know there's some food going, but actually, one of them got rather bored with his diet and ate a live pigeon about 5 years ago. They're Russian pelicans, but they have Polish names because the gardener's Polish, and they're bred in the Czech Republic, so they're kind of Euro pelicans, I suppose. There was one there from Louisiana called Louis. I don't know whether he's still there or not, but you've got Russian pelicans, you've got Australian black swans, you've got Chinese barred geese, and far too many Canadian geese that had to be culled every so often. Now, we're going to come round to the side of the lake here, and you look back, you can see a rather imposing building. There's a man in a green jacket standing outside the front entrance, and that's the Treasury. Now, the Treasury, of course, is where Britain's financial policy is deliberated on, and we have Rishi Sunak, who's our current Chancellor, otherwise known as Dishi Rishi. And just to the left, there's an entrance there. Now, in World War II, that was surrounded by sandbags. That's the entrance to the Cabinet War Rooms. In 1939, it was decreed that part of the coal cellar underneath the Treasury should be converted into a shelter for members of government. At one point, over 200 people down there, a great warren of different rooms, and it's where the Cabinet would meet when bombs are dropping from time to time. Above it, an area called the Number 10 Annex, where Churchill had to move because Number 10 had been badly damaged by bombs during the Blitz. He didn't like it very much, but he didn't like the whole place either at all. And during a raid was happening once, and the Cabinet were all assembled downstairs, and somebody said, where's the Prime Minister? So he said, I'm afraid he's on the roof, sir, trying to see what's going on. A very difficult man to control, Churchill. But you can see the map room, which was sealed in 1945, and also see the Churchill exhibitions, which is really fascinating. A lady I spoke to spent about 4 hours down there. And there's also the world's first hotline, which looked rather like a private toilet or a private lavatory. You thought Churchill was spending a long time in the loo. In fact, he was talking to Roosevelt. Fascinating place, and well worth going to see. I took my mother around there, and she was a nurse here during World War II. It was a real nostalgic trip for her. So, under the Cabinet War Rooms, we come, as it were, and you've got the Foreign Office just here to the right. This dates from the 1860s and was built when the British Empire was at its height. A magnificent palatial building here, and you can visit it once a year on the open weekend when so many offices are open, like the Treasury, like Parliament, and the Foreign Office. And we had a foreign secretary here in the 1960s, during the Wilson government era. His name was George Brown, and he was rather fond of drink and being fairly tactless as well. And this is our foreign secretary. During a South American reception, he rather myopically walked up towards a figure dressed in a long purple gown and said, "Madam, madam, may I have this dance?" when the music was playing. And this figure said, "No, for three reasons. First, you are drunk. Second, this music is the Peruvian national anthem. And third, I am the Cardinal Archbishop of Montevideo." Yes, that was our foreign secretary. Really good. Now, as we come along around the lake, you can see the pelicans over there, by the way. And they're waiting for their fish, I think. And there's a little cottage here. It's in a sort of Swiss-style chalet thing. It's called Duck Island Cottage. And this is where the Royal Society of Ornithologists would actually study the birds in the 19th century, and much later where Princess Elizabeth, before she was queen, along with her sister Princess Margaret, would feed the ducks from time to time. And you can walk along a little causeway here and see what our queen would have seen as a child. It's quite charming. Also, created here, it's like an allotment garden with a lot of vegetables. You've got spinach and cabbage and even a beehive as well. Okay, let's avoid the pelicans for the moment and come along to the back of an area known as Horse Guards Parade. A military parade ground, and has been so ever since the 16th century, where we celebrate the monarch's official birthday. She has a real birthday in April and an official one in June. It's called Trooping the Colour. Queen's Birthday Parade. Magnificent display of the soldiers in their red coats and bearskin hats and horses. It's really is spectacular. You can see the beating of the retreat here as well, another ceremony. And there's a state visit if a president of another country comes here, they review the troops here on Horse Guards Parade. Now turn to the right and you can see, now sadly I can't take you down this street because ever since the IRA tried to assassinate the Prime Minister in the 1990s, this being closed off for understandable reasons. And you can see a bit of grey brick there behind the trees, and that is the back of number 10. So it's for the residence of the first Lord of the Treasury or Prime Minister ever since the 1730s, the gift of George II. The first incumbent was Sir Robert Walpole, and of course we now have Boris Johnson and his partner, Carrie Symons, who is the first time that a Prime Minister has actually openly lived with his girlfriend, not his wife, in number 10. I mean, Prime Ministers, of course, had mistresses left, right and centre in the past, but it's the only time a Prime Minister has done that. So it's connected to other buildings in Downing Street. There's the press office, there's also what was the residence of the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and number 11... When Tony Blair moved in, he and Cherie had so many baby Blairs they couldn't fit in number 10, so they moved into number 11, and Gordon Brown, who was Chancellor, had to move out. Didn't help the relationship one bit, I don't think. But now, really interesting, I was here a few weeks ago, and I happened to notice a cat snaking around the buildings of Whitehall. And I asked one of the security guards, and I said, "Is that?" He said, "Oh, yeah, that's Larry, that's number 10's cat." So number 10 is its own cat, and the Foreign Office has its own cat called Palmerston, and the Treasury has one called Gladstone. Each of these are civil servants, these cats, and they're allowed for within the government budget. Now, number 10 is connected to other offices, including the Cabinet Office, a lot of it by underground tunnels. When Tony Blair took over the job as Prime Minister, his first job was to be taken out a long tunnel right under the Ministry of Defence to what's called the Cobra Room, and they taught him how to set the bomb off if he felt like it. So it's all interconnected here. Now, looking across at Horse Guards Parade, a magnificent 18th century main building there, and on the left-hand side, a building from the Edwardian period, sort of neo-classical, neo-baroque. It's got domes. It's also got radio masts on the top, and these masts date from World War II. And it's one of these offices here that Ian Fleming worked for Naval Intelligence. So, and when he was bored, he'd write. So James Bond was created in this building. OK, we're going to come through the central arch now. This, by the way, is a royal entrance. Nobody can drive through here, not even bicycles. It's an official entrance to St. James's Park. And we're coming through. You see just on the left-hand side there, one of the Blues and Royals. It's a guard with his sabre drawn. And he's got his helmet with a red plume on the back and a blue coat. Tomorrow it'll be the lifeguards who have a white plume instead of a red, so they change every single day. If you're energetic, you can come here at 11 o'clock and see the changing of the horse guards, 11:30, the changing of the foot guards at Buckingham Palace. You can get two guard changes in one morning if the weather's good. As we come out here, you can see the banqueting house directly opposite, and that's all that's left of the Palace of Whitehall. The rest of it was destroyed in a terrible fire of 1698, and this banqueting house is where Charles I stepped out onto a scaffold here, and his head was struck off 30th of January 1649. And you can see his head actually just up there, just as we saw it outside St Margaret's Church on the first part of the tour. And now turn round. You've got this clock here, and just by the number 2, you can see a black dot. And this commemorates the fact his head was stricken off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. This commemorates this creation of the royal martyr. Well, this is a place which is drenched in 1,000 years of history, and I've enjoyed taking you around it and look forward to the next tour. Thanks very much.